Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time to grab your board and head out into the waves. Not that kind of board. We're talking about nonprofit boards here with a woman who seems to know a lot about them and everybody on them here in Orange County, Nelma Maddox. Welcome.
Thanks, Paul. It's good to see you.
I love your music. Really, the music is what starts the show.
Okay. Just say that to everyone. So today, I'm going to just launch right into it. I think it's important to just remind everybody in the audience why I do this show. I do this show because of the amount of nonprofits we have in Orange County. We have about over 9,000, I think, was the first research I did. And so I felt it was really important to bring in those who do the work, not so much board talk, but board walk. I think that's really important. So today my guests are Bill Lyon and Angelina. We are so excited to have you here. I do think it's important to talk about how we met. Bill, how do you remember how we met?
I know it was through Pretend City, but I'm trying to remember exactly how.
Okay, fair enough. A very young board member. One of the very first boards that I was ever on was Pretend City. And it was back in 2016. This was when we used to do the board meetings at your office.
Oh, okay. That was the first board I was on.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to get
but
into that
more. It's
been
20 years plus. See,
okay, fair enough. So, yeah, 2016 for me, that's 10 years already. Yeah, so, yeah. Angelina, I was not even thinking about middle school then. But we'll get into all that. And Pretend City is definitely one of the important ones. But I also kind of wanted to hear how it is that you ended up on boards in general. And I think it has to do with your family. Fair?
Well, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, Pretend City was my first board. And I have to give credit to actually Anne-Marie Moiseau because, or Laster now, married name. But at the time it was Moiseau because she... I'd only been working, I think, a year or two, and she approached me, and we were building in Ladera, and she was like the head of marketing for Ladera, and she was the current chair of Pretend City when they were doing mobile programs.
Oh.
And so she approached me about joining the board, and she's, I'm trying to start this next generation of philanthropists, and I was like, I don't know, 24, 25, I was like, I'm just trying to figure out what I'm doing. And I talked to my dad about it, and he's, oh, don't worry, we're doing enough. And so I kind of said no, and then I can't remember the gap. I know when I got involved, because Angelina was about a year old, or not even a year old, and she was born in 2004, so it's right, so I probably got involved in 2004 through 2005. And I've learned this was a tactic, but I didn't know that at the time. But I got invited to participate in a steering committee. And there was only three meetings. It's only three meetings. Short-term commitment. And the tactic, I would say, really worked because it wasn't a tactic to manipulate me. It was a tactic to get me to understand what they were doing. And once I did understand that, then I was hooked. And I felt invested in the project, which... We actually, the steering committee was about this other mobile project. And at the end of that process, we basically recommended to Pretend City that forget this other mobile project. You should open a museum, which is what the goal always was. But to raise, they were going to raise so much money to do this mobile thing and have, it was just going to be mostly sunk into operating. We were like, you guys should just go for the museum. And so that's how I got sucked into board work.
When we say steering committee, I think they mean roping.
Yeah.
Committee. Right?
They were steering me. I thought it was steering a project, but it was steering me.
Now we know.
But no, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. And it was just the right, I don't think it would have been the right time before, but because I had a little baby at home and I was like thinking about like, how is she going to grow up in the world and turn out okay? And she's growing up in Newport Beach. And the mobile program was like all about careers and how you need everybody in the community to make things work. And so that really resonated with me all from an aspirational side, exploring things you want to be when you grow up, but also from a respect side. It's like you can't really look down on anybody. If you don't have the grocer or you don't have the farmer, you're going to starve. So it's, there's all parts of society are important.
For sure. I think that's really great. So hearing that, Angelina, you were one when that happened.
Yes.
Talk to me a little bit about growing up around such a philanthropic family, because I know it didn't just start with dad, and I know grandma and grandpa were there too.
I would definitely say my first memories of being involved in philanthropy were with Pretend City. We were talking about a story the other day of an event that my dad was going to for Pretend City. I think it was a poker event or something, and I was really upset that I couldn't go because I loved Pretend City and I thought the event was being held there, which it wasn't. But once I understood that it was an adult-only event and I couldn't go, I decided while my dad was getting ready to draw him a little picture, and it was him driving down in a car through the streets of Pretend City, and he ended up bringing the picture to the event, and I don't remember if it was an auction or a raffle or something, but it ended up getting sold for a pretty big sum of money.
That's adorable.
Yes, so I think that was the first time, and then people kind of knew me as the girl who drew this little picture that did really well. And then I think just philanthropy in general has always been a big part of our family and our lives, from seeing it in my grandparents and then my parents. And then in high school, before high school, I served on the youth board of Pretend City. And then in high school, I wrote and illustrated a children's book about ocean pollution, and then had the opportunity to do some children's readings at Pretend City, and then donated my proceeds back to Pretend City as kind of my part, and felt like it was a full circle moment, because from the drawing I first did, I've always been a very creative person, but finding a way that I can incorporate my passions into something that will make an impact. And I think that really came together in high school and even now.
And can I interrupt for one second and just remind the two people listening who don't recognize the family name here? This is royalty here in Orange County. The lion name, your father, the general, built Cota de Casa and other things. Talk about growing up in that world. Did he encourage you to be a philanthropist? You talked about you want to encourage your daughter to do this. Did he encourage you to do this?
Like I said, I think he, in my 20s, at least the first time I was approached when I asked him about it, he kind of said, just focus on your career right now. Don't worry about it.
Because we as a family are already generating, but doing that.
But similar to Angelina, I got drugged to all kinds of things when I was a kid. And I was generally the only kid, or maybe one of two kids at the event, which she was at, I can't remember what year that was, when we had the party in the tent in Pretend City's parking lot.
Oh, yeah, the big gala,
And she and her girlfriend were the only two kids there. And they were up on stage go-go dancing with flashback heart attack. And
that's awesome.
I thought it was cool, but I was also a little worried, but she's turned out fine, so it's all okay.
Phew!
I think that was the grand opening or something.
Because I guess the question is, does it get instilled in you if you grow up in that kind of atmosphere, or is it something you still have to come to and learn?
I don't know. I think it depends. Yeah, definitely. Having the role models, I think, is really helpful. And I think it just depends on your temperament. And I don't know. I can go back and think of experiences, whether it was going to fundraisers, but I'd say, and I know you wanted to segue into Orangewood eventually, but Orangewood, I went to San Margaret High School. We had to have service hours, and I was short towards the end of high school, and we had to have so many hours. And so I asked my parents, I said, is there a way for me to volunteer or do something in Orangewood? And I didn't really, and this is the children's home, not the foundation, which does a lot of other things, but we can get into that. But the children's home was like the first like triage intake facility for battered and abused kids that have been taken away from their families because there's bad stuff going on. And I don't know if I totally appreciated that. I knew it was like a orphanage, but I've been to fundraisers. I'd seen Annie. I don't know what I thought it was.
It didn't come to life.
No, but a 10-year-old guy in high school, and they had to go to get a court order to allow, I think maybe it was my girlfriend or somebody, because she wasn't 18, I don't remember, but a judge had to approve us working there, and worked there for 2 weeks, 8 hours a day. And
what drew you to that? Why pick that? That's outside of your normal comfort zone.
It was the family thing. That was my parents' kind of number one focus was children's charities. And they'd been involved in all kinds of things that I still hear about later. At some point, my dad was in the Tocqueville Society, and they were doing stuff for City of Hope, and they were doing this, and they were doing that. But I'd say in the ATSC, which was a similar, I think, focus as Orangewood. Mm-hmm. But Orangewood, and I guess if it's okay, I'll go back and start at the beginning.
Yeah,
that makes more sense.
It is a fantastic organization. We've had them in here numerous times.
Oh, good.
And I'll give you my two little second take on it. I'll give you a different perspective on it. So my only child is adopted out of foster care. And she fell into foster care and was taken abuse and horrible things and stuff here at a young age. And we're good Irish Catholics. I'm from Santa Margaret Catholic High School. Oh. And we one day heard about all these kids in foster care, half a million, never go home to anybody.
Yep.
And we pull them out to save them, and we can't find them a home. So what do? We turn them loose and give them a check, and they end up on the streets in horrible situations. Yep. So Orangewood is a spectacular example of how they not just pull people out to save them, but help turn them into get what everything that they can be. And I think that's a world people just don't understand much about. So it's very near and dear to my heart. I adopted one of those kids. So
that's
I understand.
Incredible.
You win. Incredible. You win the day.
I win the day. I didn't say that to win. I'm just saying.
I know. You're very competitive with your hat on today. But
there's a consequence to the work that you do. Yeah. It isn't just, oh, that feels good, and let's move on to something else. You're really changing people's lives.
And I think at 18, like Bill's saying, it doesn't strike you then. It's only now that we're able to reflect.
It wouldn't have, to me, when I was 18, I wouldn't have registered that.
You say that all the time. You're always like, oh, your son says you made him do it.
Yeah.
But eventually it comes into their heart, and you really can't stop it.
But you want me to tell a story?
Yeah, please.
And let's get you a little closer to the mic.
Okay. Get on
in there.
All right. The real beginning is my sister Marcia, who's my half-sister on my mom's side, so she's about 20 years older than me. In 1973, she graduated from the police academy, became the first female assigned to patrol work in Anaheim PD. And
wow, that's something right there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. She actually wanted to be FBI, but they weren't taking women back then, so it tells you something. But anyways.
It's another show.
So, but yeah, because she was a woman, a lot of her assignments were, okay, police have been called, they're at a house, mom and dad are going to jail, and there's kids there, and they need to go somewhere. And so the county's facility was called the Albert Sitton Home. And so she would pick them up and take them there, drop them off, middle of the night. And
imagine your parents get arrested, and now you're removed and placed somewhere.
It's hard to
wrap your head around.
And she would tell my mom these horror stories of, it's like jail. Everything's gray. They don't have enough beds. Kids are sleeping on the floor. Yeah. They don't have enough blankets. It was, for whatever reason, in the 80s, I think, I was reading something recently, like the child abuse thing just exploded, or maybe it was just the awareness.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so she would tell my mom about it, and my mom and dad got married in 1971. So this is a couple of years later, and my mom had worked in the company and was very close to the company and knew how it worked. And so one of the things she started doing is every year at the holidays in construction, all the subcontractors would deliver sweets and booze and stuff. And so she kind of talked to my dad, and they kind of put the word out around the holidays, hey, don't bring us all that crap. Bring us toys, bring us blankets, these are the things that Albert Sitton Home needs. I believe it was about 1983, so I was 10. They approached my father, and the guy that was running Albert Sitton Home, I think at that time, was Bill Steiner, who became a...
Was he a supervisor?
No. Yeah, he became a county supervisor later. Yeah. But he had some prior experience, I think it was like Good Samaritan Boys Home or something. But anyway, he ran Albert Sitton Home. And so there was a group of people that sort of hatched this idea that they needed to build a new facility, and they really wanted it to be special and not institutional and not...
Not jail for kids who've done nothing other than have the wrong parents, right?
Exactly. And I believe, we just celebrated last year 40 years that the home's been open. And I hadn't been since I was 18, and so my sister and I went, and it's beautiful. It's like Spanish style, little bungalows, kids are divided by age, and there's lots of land. It was land that the county owned, and it was a public-private partnership. Mm-hmm. So I think the foundation was started somewhere in there, and the foundation raised $8 million.
Wow.
And then deeded the project back to the county. And it's one of the early kind of models for the home aid sort of scenario.
Model,
because they basically, my dad and others in the construction industry in particular, called in all kinds of favors, got free roof tile, free this, free that. So they raised $8 million, but they probably built like a $25 million facility because the dollars went really far. And so he was asked to be the founding chairman by Bill Steiner, and that was, given the history, that was a natural thing. So I grew up going to these fundraisers and then went and volunteered there, and was like, my cousin and my girlfriend were like working with the little tiny toddlers, and I was working with preschool kids, and I wasn't the most hands-on guy with kids at that time.
Really? An 18-year-old guy? Come on.
For our listeners who are listening, you can't see Angelina's face.
But,
looking at the YouTube.
We're sharing stories at night, and there was like one family that there were four siblings there, and one was a baby, one was like two, And then there were two sisters in my group, and they all had cigarette burns on their backs. It was just awful.
So sorry.
Just awful.
Yeah.
And then, of course, one of the girls, like, took a shine to me, and every day was getting in trouble because she was supposed to be doing something, and instead she was, like, trying to goof off and get my attention. And so that was the hardest part. As hard as it was, I didn't really think it wasn't really hard to be there, but to know I wasn't coming back and leave on that second Friday was really tough. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how to handle it, and I didn't want to try to explain it to her, and I didn't know what to do. And I felt bad about it, but I was just like, I can't tell this little girl I'm not going to be back. Like, how do I say that? It's just awful. But it definitely made an impression on me, and I think I grew up knowing I was very lucky, and the longer I've been alive, the more I have appreciated that, especially
I'll tell you one little quick story that sort of relates to that one. So we were looking to adopt, and we decided to make that choice. We didn't have any children. And heard this church, so we said, maybe that's for us. We were originally just going to be foster parents, and then we looked into it and started. So you go to places like Orangewood and other things, and I hate to say it, they have almost puppy fairs. They have kids on display and hoping that you'll meet them and then take a shine to them. And so we went to one of these things, and this cute little boy, we were all hovering around and talking to him, and I said, he had a toy, a dog or a dinosaur. I said, what's your dinosaur's name? He said, I don't name my toys. And I said to somebody, I said, they have already had everything removed from them. They create no attachments. They fight this idea. So the idea to tell somebody, I'm not coming back, that's their whole life. Nobody's coming back.
Yeah.
And I have a little bit of a hopeful Pollyanna view of that. That maybe you don't realize, depending on how old that child was at the time, looking forward, she could possibly be somebody who's sitting across from me at some point saying, somebody made an impression on me.
Yeah, that's true.
And this is why I give. And that's what has, Paul and I have noticed along the year, just over the months of doing this show. It doesn't matter. Some people start from nothing. Some people start with very little. And we know, Bill and I both know, that the people who give on boards, there are people who will give $50, but that's because it's everything they had. It's everything they pulled together for a mission that they believe in. So we've had so many people come in here, but Pretend City's mission is the same. Orangewood tugs very hard at the heartstrings, and thank you for sharing that. I do want to shift a little bit to Angelina's story earlier about poker, because I want to give Matt Stewart a really hard time right now. Matt Stewart's the reason why I'm sitting in this chair.
And that's who Matt Stewart is.
Matt Stewart is also a philanthropist in Orange County. He's a lot more generous with other people's money than he is.
He gives that away freely.
I'm teasing. He and Jill are incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible family. And, Matt, I got Bill first.
Yeah, we did hear that.
That's what I wanted to say.
Because he came in today and said, this is my first podcast. Like, even Matt Stewart couldn't get him on his podcast.
Oh, I'm sending this to him right after.
Okay, all right.
Okay, Angelina, I promise to also ask this.
Sure.
Looking forward, when you're done with USC, making everybody proud.
And what are you studying, by the way?
Yeah. I'm studying design, so specifically graphic design, and then I have a minor in entrepreneurship. So
your artistry has completely gone full circle.
Yes, I like to say that I think the book really set me on that path, and I've stuck with it ever since. So.
Okay, so when Pretend City is in Great Park, I expect to see an Angelina Lyon mural.
Okay.
That would be amazing.
We're working that in. Sandy? Okay, when you are looking back and you have a family of your own, where do you think you'll end up giving? Assuming I know you will.
What tugs at your heart?
I guess in high school, I was really into ocean pollution, but now I think just seeing what my family's been involved in and what I've been a part of since I've been so young, I really do think just children and education. The sorority I'm a part of, our initiative is children's education and literacy.
That's amazing.
So again, kind of full circle with me starting the book, but I think younger children's education and literacy is really important, and I'd like to involve that in my own family one day. But even if it's not particularly that, I just think having the values of philanthropy and giving back in some capacity really does a lot for younger children as they're growing up, and I think it did a lot for me and changed my perspective on a lot of things, so I hope to instill that.
Be honest, did you ever resist it when they said, oh, come on, we got to do this? And you're like, I don't want to do that. I want to go hang out with my friends or whatever.
Honestly, I don't think so. I feel like my parents did a really good job of making it not only fun, but also sharing the harsh truth of some of it and the reason why it's so important. So I don't think it was ever something that I really wanted to resist. As I saw that there was a cause, whether if I understood it completely at the time or not, I knew that there was some sort of need and importance to it. And
for sure.
Yeah.
One, I'm just thinking another element to that Orangewood story. So that you fast forward, so Dad was the founding chairman. He was involved for a long time. And now the home is still there and still a county-run facility, but the Orangewood Foundation does all these other things and supports foster youth, particularly after they age out. And I'm actually not on the Orangewood board. I'm chair of a program board under Orangewood Foundation, which is the General Lyon Workforce Academy, which is to try to take generally former foster youth 18 to 25 and help get them internships and with a career path upward and living wage type things. But my dad stayed involved forever, and he was, even when he wasn't on the board, he was still involved, but he passed that baton to Frank Serene, who was our partner, and now Frank's oldest son Casey is on that board, and we have Kyle on our board with Pretend City.
He's on there too.
No, Kyle's on our board.
You're
my with Pretend City board.
Okay, got it.
Casey's on the Orangewood board. Okay. But you go, so 2008, my dad, I think Schwarzenegger was supposed to speak at the Orangewood luncheon. And
who wouldn't want to go hear Schwarzenegger? Just to stand and say, hi, you know, that I'm accent and everything.
If he goes to the bathroom, he'll say he'll be back.
I'll be back. I like that.
But so there's a big fire, I don't know where, somewhere in California. So he couldn't come because it was when he was governor. And so they called my dad at last minute. They're like, hey, can you be the keynote speaker for the luncheon? And so Dad's like 85, 86 at this point, but he worked until he was 95. So he was in his prime, still doing great. But I think maybe he was a little stressed. I don't know. So he's speaking, and I'm in China. She's home at school. I'm in China with her little brother, who was less than one at that point, on a Bowers tour, which is coincidentally another board I'm involved with. And my dad goes down at the podium. After he gives his favorite joke when he's giving a public speech was, people ask me if I've lived in Orange County all my life, and I tell them I don't know yet. And then he goes down at the podium, and the audience was a little confused.
So he like fell over or something?
Just
collapsed.
Down.
Collapsed.
Oh, man.
Tachycardia hurt. He had a weird wiring thing in his heart they'd been watching since he was 40, and it had never done anything, and that was the day.
Short-circuited.
Yes, sent his heart off the rails, and so there was a off-duty policeman and fireman in the audience. They started CPR immediately. The defibrillator at the hotel was dead, so that didn't work. So they kept going until the ambulance got there. And lo and behold, the reason why those two guys were there is because the policeman spent time at Orangewood Children's Home when he was a kid because his parents had been arrested. So you think of like...
Oh my God, I'm going to cry.
Yeah.
I don't normally cry.
There's a thread through all this. Yeah. Oh my God.
Karma, whatever you want to call it. But you think about not only all the kids' lives that were affected, but it's like it came back around to
one
my dad,
comes back to save your dad.
And he had lunch with those guys every year, basically, until he passed, and we're still friendly with them. And
Oh my God, what a story.
I was in the back of my head, I was like, I didn't finish the really important part of the story.
I'm going to take you back to the work you do. So you're on another, it sounds like you're on a lot of boards.
I'm on a few, maybe too many.
You probably get steered a lot.
It's steered, yeah, it gets roped. That's what that sounds like. I didn't think that steering has to do with cattle and
roping. They
don't
leave Bill alone.
So you talk about working with these kids afterwards. That's what shocked me. Half a million kids, roughly, get taken, are in the system right now. And half of them ain't going home to anybody.
Yeah.
So you can't find a home for them, particularly as they age. Nobody wants damaged goods. I want the little baby that I can still save. And so what happens to those kids? They age out. We took them out to save them. That was always the priority. Mm-hmm. Save the kids from the abuse, from the horrible situation. And then we don't save them. And we turn them loose. And they go down terrible paths, prostitution, drugs, homelessness, everything else, because they got nobody there for them.
Yep.
So finding them work, supporting them after they age out, if they don't make their way back home or to a relative or to a new home, talk about the work that you do, because I think that's critical.
Yeah, so this came up right after, not right after, but pretty soon after my father passed. And Frank Serian, who kind of took over the board work with Orangewood for my father, and then, like I said, passed it to his son, Casey, now. But he was still involved. We all have lunch with Chris Simonson periodically, because he's a great guy. But there was a thesis project that someone had done around how to address this issue. You have kids that age out, they have no safety net, they have nobody to kind of guide them into the workforce. Like, how do you make give them a fighting chance?
Because in some ways we make it worse. We pull them out to save them, and yet now they got nobody.
And someone had put this together for Orangewood, and Frank was aware of it. He approached my mom and I and said, hey, how about the three of us kind of put the seed money in to get this program going, and then we'll go raise some other funds and create a little endowment under the Orangewood umbrella to keep it going. And so we did that, and it's been great. It's small cohorts of 8 to 10 kids, and they try to partner with companies that are looking to hire people and have trouble hiring people. And then they let the kids, 18 to 25 youth, I guess is more appropriate. Right. But they interview or get to see a couple different options and then pick one. And they're getting paid while they're working. And it's a year-long commitment by the employer that they're going to give them employment for a year. And then at the same time, the program on the Orangewood side supports them and supports the employer, because a lot of employers just don't know how to manage people who've had a lot of trauma. And so they were explaining to me things that we take for granted. Your car breaks down on the way to work, and they might just go, oh, I guess I don't have a job now. I'm not going to show up. And
Not that I'm not just going to show up. I guess I've sacrificed my job. I've lost my job.
And they're like, no, just call somebody. It's not a
big
deal.
Call AAA.
Call your work. Explain it to them. And they help them with maybe getting a driver's license. Maybe it's housing. You know, Orangewood has all these other programs that kind of can feed into it.
Incredible.
Where they help house them. And then the idea is these are jobs that they could make a career out of. It's not a no future job. And so it's been great. The companies have partnered with Orangewood on it. Been great, and we keep trying to get the word out to more people.
Any hesitation of these companies to take on this challenge? Because these kids, that's the stigma. These kids have been traumatized. So, gee, I feel bad for them, but let somebody else deal with it.
Yeah, I don't know. You'd have to talk to the program officers that are in the weeds with them. And it doesn't always work. Some of them find they just can't do it every day in and day out. But there have been tons of success stories, you know. People have been promoted twice in their first year before they really even got through the probationary period. But I guess there's been similar programs that end at 6 months and everything's kind of going great. And the data kind of showed that's when things fall apart. There'll be some little thing that'll come up and they won't know how to deal with it, or the employer isn't dealing with it sensitively, and then it just implodes. And so that's why the 12-month thing is really important, but I know Tate and Associates, Trevor Tate on our Pretensity board, they're one of the, there's probably 20 companies now doing it, but they've had, some of them had incredible success. The Olson Company, we had some former William Lyon Homes construction folks there, and so they trained a couple of these young guys to be assistant superintendents, and they just, with given the right coaching and the right opportunity, like
guidance,
they're just
and modeling
hooked up, and
that's the message I got, not just from my own experience, but from the whole going through that process and learning about the world of foster care and all that. These kids are incredibly resilient. If you give them a chance, they can do remarkable things. But many of them have grown up like wild childs, on the street, on their own, under severe circumstances, or removed from these homes, bouncing around all the time. They're really on their own in a way that I don't think any of us can grasp. So
yeah, for sure. And I'm going to say this. 30 minutes isn't enough with, obviously, Bill and Angelina, as you can hear.
Clearly.
He's on way too many boards.
Can we get him to come back? It was hard to get him to come to one.
I'm going to give them just the last couple minutes to just say, if there wasn't anything that you wanted to share with an audience today, please do so. I'll let Angelina go first and then give Dad a little time to think about it.
Yeah.
But, like, if you want somebody to get involved in what you're doing right now or look to the future and anything, just kind of pop in your head as you're sitting here listening to Dad go down memory lane.
I guess somewhat inspirational something, but I just feel like, especially for people my age and younger, it's really important to find something that you're passionate about and try to make an impact with it. And I think that's what I did with my book, but I feel like that's the easiest way to get involved, is if you can somehow blend your passion and then make a difference in someone else's life. I think that's the easiest way to get involved in really important causes. And I see that done in a lot of organizations at USC even, and that my friends are involved in. And it's really cool to see a lot of young people getting involved, like you said, in philanthropy so young, rather than something that you do later in life after you've completed your career.
Do your sorority sisters ever looked at you and say, what are you doing? Come on, we got a party to go to. Why are you doing this stuff?
No, choir to participate in our philanthropy. And every Friday, a group of us go to a local school and read to first graders there. And okay, I feel like that's a really fun, direct way to be involved, I guess, and see impact rather than just an indirect way.
That's lovely.
Yes.
That's lovely.
And the thing that occurred to me, because I think a lot of people said it earlier, sorry, I was leaning back.
That's okay.
When you think of philanthropy, I think a lot of people think it's sitting in an office writing checks and just doling out dollars to organizations, which is important, but...
That's what I thought. I thought, you get roped in to write a check and to help raise money and to do things, and because charities are always short of money and they need money. And...
Well, the money is important, but the part I was going to say, and where the age factor, because young folks generally can't do the money part as well, but for me, Pretend City, my best memories and why I really enjoyed being involved was, it was still that way when you joined, but in the early days, it was a startup. And as a board member, we didn't have a huge staff. It was, can you read this? Can you tell us what's wrong with it? Can you help us with this bid? Sharing my experience and just know-how, whatever that happened to be in, or even just being involved in the design part of it, because it was cool. It was being able to be part of it. And the money part is not that fun. It can be. I guess it depends if that's why we do poker and there's alcohol and all that.
Most board members in Noma get to be hands-on, or is it they're at an arm's length from the real work?
It's an individual thing. I think you've heard me say this on the show a lot of times. It's time or treasure. Sometimes it's both. And there's not a lot of people who are in the opportunity to do the treasure part. And that's okay, because if they have a heart to give time, sometimes that's even better. So.
Yeah, and sometimes even if you don't have the treasure, if people who have treasure and you can make those introductions, that's really important. And with the Workforce Academy, knowing companies that are struggling to hire people that don't necessarily need college grads, that they just need people that are willing to work hard and grind, and you want to do something cool and give somebody a shot who's had a lot of disadvantages, that's incredible. That makes a huge difference.
For sure. So pretendcity.org if you want to look at Pretend City and see how to get more involved. And then for Orangewood, can you help me with their website? I'm sure you can look it up.
You may have to go look it up here.
Or Orangewood Foster Home.
There's the Orangewood Foundation is kind of the
umbrella. That's what confuses people.
That's the umbrella.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the foundation is all the programs, and that's where the fundraising happens. The home is really the county facility, which there is confusion because that's a county-run facility. Mm-hmm. I don't think they raise money anymore.
Got it. Okay. That helps. All right. Awesome. Thank you both for your time. I really appreciate you coming in. I feel like I have to have you come in again.
Okay. We can do that.
Thanks so much.
Learned a ton.
All right. Thank you for joining us here today as we explore a world few of us really understand and all of us want to learn more about. That's the world of philanthropy and boards right here on Board Talk. Only in Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio, streaming live from our studios here at the University of California, Irvine's Beale Applied Innovation Center.